I'm certain. Item 968.
Item 968, accept a grant in the amount of $852,000 and authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Oregon Department of Transportation for the planning and development phase of the Portland Central City Multimodal Project.
Commissioner Novick.
Colleagues, for several years now, we have been anticipating a Central City Multimodal Project to help make getting around the Central City safer, easier, more convenient by foot, bike, and transit through the construction of active transportation projects. We applied to Metro for a $6 billion grant for this project, or for Central City Multimodal Safety Improvements in 2013. That grant was approved. We also plan to supplement that grant with Fix Our Streets money from the recently approved gas tax. This item would allow us to accept a preliminary pot of money of $852,000 to undertake a planning and project list development process with a variety of stakeholders, as informed by the Central City 2035 plan. The idea is to engage stakeholders, yield a list of infrastructure projects in the central city. We would anticipate that that list will come to council at the end of this process in approximately a year. And I'll now turn it over to Art and Gabe.
Right. Good morning. Thanks for having us here this morning. So this is really an exciting moment for the Central City and an exciting moment for, I think, for PBOT. We've really long discussed the need for an intentional look at the investments we need in the Central City. In particular, Central Cities throughout the country and throughout the world are reinventing themselves. And Portland Central City needs to think of itself as an evolving place that is continuing to be competitive with Central Cities throughout the country. And so this package of investment can support the types of planning initiatives that are being contemplated in the Central City 2035 plan, which will come to you over the next 6 months, and can sort of bring right after that planning effort direct investment in the Central City to continue to make it vibrant and make sure that we can continue to see the Central City grow and include more residents and more employees in a supportive way that we can really be proud of. So. And so, as the commissioner noted, this is a long-awaited grant. I mean, part of the challenges with the regional flexible funds process is we apply and we have to wait 3 years before the funding starts coming. So, we've been waiting, and the constituents have been long awaiting for this process to get started. So, we're very excited to be underway. So.
Just ask, how come we got the grant to do it before we got the grant to plan it?
Well, that's a good question. What we decided to do was put those two elements together, given the complexity of the conversation around finalizing which infrastructure projects we would move forward with. It seemed best to combine those two phases together into one effort. So we will be able to directly follow on the finalization of prioritizing which projects to move with that capital investment.
Well, we already got the grant from Metro. Usually you do the planning and then you get the grant for doing it. How come we got the grant
right.
to do it first?
With the grant with Metro, we just applied for both of those cycles together. So overall, the Central City Plan gives us the broad plan to work off of, and Gabe will talk a little bit more about this. But this really is taking the overall strategy for the Central City, which is a 20-year plan, and breaking it down into really concrete investment strategies. And so it made sense to put that all into one effort.
All right, correct me if I'm wrong. Right. My understanding was that this $852,000 is part of the $6 million, and
correct.
The $6 million was approved, but we haven't actually gotten the money yet, and this is sort of releasing the first
tranche. This is the first tranche of money. Yes, exactly. So the rest of the funds will be coming once we finalize the plan for investment. We'll then finalize the contract for implementation.
Art, when you say flexible funding from Metro, that's the same pot that we tapped for the bike share, right?
It is, yes, correct. Yep.
And so this is competitive money.
Very competitive, yes.
So it gets divvied up by Metro based on what people apply for and
right, and making sure that they're following through on the policy intentions set at the regional level. Right.
Okay, good. Yep.
So I'll pass it over to Gabe, who can give you more details.
Sure. We've just got a short presentation here. Commissioners, thank you for having me. Gabe Graff, Capital Project Manager at the Bureau of Transportation.
Thank you.
Council nominated this project for the Regional Flexible Fund program in September 18th of 2013. The grant was approved and included, as Art mentioned, in the 2016-2018 STIP, or Statewide Transportation Improvement Program. You can see the project boundary here, which mirrors that of the Central City boundary. And the project seeks to make getting around the Central City safer, easier, and more convenient by foot, bike, transit through planning, prioritizing, and constructing active transportation projects. At the time, the project was identified as a priority for three reasons. First, safety, safety of people walking and biking. 20 of the top 40 high-crash intersections for walking and biking were within the project area. Two, a lack of a bicycle network designed for people of all ages and abilities in the central city. And finally, a lack of clarity from stakeholders and the public on a strategy for active transportation improvements in the central city, particularly for the bike network. And another key reason for this being a priority is growth. Today's central city is home to the densest concentration of people and jobs in the state. It serves as the region's economic hub. And as you know, 30% of Portland's growth is expected to occur within this boundary, which represents just 3% of the land. 37,000 new households, 51,000 new jobs. How can we safely and efficiently get people to these jobs, the cultural amenities, the retail, the dining that the central city has to offer as it grows? That's a key question of the Central City 2035 plan, and we see this project as one of PBOT's first significant investments in that vision. So as Commissioner Novick mentioned, we have $8.8 million against this effort, and this initial funding of $852,000 will pay for the planning and development phase, resulting in a prioritized project list. We'll break those projects down into tiers, with top priority projects fitting within the dedicated funding that we are discussing here today. We'll also develop a second tier of projects that we don't have the dedicated funding for, but we'd seek to find funding for in a 5 to 10 year time horizon, and a final tier of projects that we'll consider with the community, but unlikely to move forward in the near term. We'll be back at council with that prioritized project list, and also to seek your approval to authorize the construction and design phase for those top-ranked projects. As Art mentioned, the good news is we have a strong foundation here in the quadrant plans and with the Central City 2035 proposed draft shown here. And also our effort is inclusive of the Green Loop, one of the big ideas in the Central City 2035 plan. We've included two members of BPS's Urban Design Studio in our project team so that we can best collaborate on this effort. Here is our rough timeline. Public outreach is underway now. We are conducting an early input survey, meeting with stakeholders, and presentations to groups like the Downtown Neighborhood Association, Portland Business Alliance, Travel Portland, the Central East Side Industrial Council, the Freight and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, and others. Upon approval of the IGA, we can begin work on this planning and development phase, which will include stakeholder interviews, forming an advisory committee, and digging into the feasibility of the lines in these plans. We hope to complete this phase within a year, with design and construction to follow. As Art mentioned, with all of these presentations, we've been underscoring that Portland streets and public spaces have always been evolving, and that this tradition of innovation and creative problem solving is something we hope to leverage in this effort. We've been experimenting with some elements of this vision. This is the street seat across the street from the 1900 building. And this is Northeast Multnomah. This idea of clearly delineating spaces for all people, regardless of how they're traveling, to be. So clear space for cyclists to ride, clear places for pedestrians to cross with shorter and safer crossings, and a safer cross-section for people who are driving. We've also been experimenting with demonstration projects to engage the public on what different ideas for streets could be. So this is Better Block's demonstration of a better Third Avenue, which we later implemented. And also community-led projects. So Second Avenue was reconfigured following the Better Block demonstration and a request from the Old Town Chinatown Community Association that was striped earlier this summer. And finally, Bike Town. We've got 1,000 bicycles in a service area that largely mirrors the central city. So making improvements, particularly in the bike network, for all the new riders who are trying cycling for the first time.
Can I ask you a question? It's my impression that this launch of Bike Town's been a huge success, and it's partly because I see these orange bikes everywhere in our community. Can you give us a quick update on what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think we're very pleased with the success of, of Bike Town. The average bike is getting 1.9 rides per day, so that's 1,900 rides. So
So far, it's been greater than projected in terms of usage. And I think one of the most exciting elements has been the sort of unexpected users, sort of folks who are not regular cyclists. So they're visiting the city, and this is the way that they're enjoying to experience the city. So that's been a really exciting part of the process.
And by the way, I talked to a guy recently downtown who was on one of the bikes, and he was stopped at a light, so just engaged each other. And he was visiting from Amsterdam. So I said, well, that's interesting.
Right.
I said, how do you like our bikes? He said, they're a bit clunky, but they work. but, I mean, it was just cool to see someone who had, you know, already sort of hardwired into his view as he's visiting a city and there's this amenity and he expects to use it.
I'm very pleased that it's working. I'm very concerned that many of the riders don't have helmets and also that they continue to ride as other cyclists do on the sidewalks in downtown. So I hope that we'll continue to work on those issues.
Absolutely. In fact, this infrastructure, in my mind, is that inviting environment to bring people off the sidewalks. You know,
right. And also, we need to get away for people to get helmets because people from out of town are generally not going to go out and buy themselves a helmet.
Thank you. So what might we see as recommendations coming out of this project? I'll share a couple of ideas and then some examples from other cities. Here is a sketch of that illustrates the separation and safety we're seeking to achieve. So again, clear spaces for everybody to be, shorter and safer crossings for pedestrians, clearly marked, refuge islands, clear spaces for cyclists to ride, clear spaces for motorists to drive, and trying to acknowledge and reduce all of the conflicts at intersections. So there's better visibility for all users and reducing crashes where they're most likely to occur. Also, transit priority, an additional goal, not just a goal of the project is not just safety, but also more trips to the central city, safer and more. Using the right-of-way in the most efficient manner possible, and transit priority is a real way to do that. As to other cities, we're looking to Seattle for their innovative designs for getting transit access, cycling, driving, and pedestrians all in the same right-of-way with designs like this, and also for their higher quality finishes and designs. This is outside of the Amazon headquarters. They have very nice-looking street infrastructure. Chicago, when I presented this to the Downtown Neighborhood Association, like, do you see any trees in this picture? I don't see any. Oh, we found one. There's one dead tree in the top left. But this is a protected intersection design that, again, shows that clear separation. Transit priority, this is in New York City, with bus-only lanes, a way to efficiently move a lot of people in and out of the central city, particularly in the peak hour. And then placemaking and temporal uses of the right-of-way. This is in Philadelphia. In the evening, they've shut down the street to vehicles and opened it up for people to enjoy and hang out or for commerce. And finally, tourism and economic development, the Indianapolis Cultural Trail. We'll be looking to see how our investments can encourage people to spend more time in the central city, to want to come to the central city, to want to bring their families on the weekend. This is a great example of that kind of solution. Thank you. Unless there are any other questions, I'll turn it over to Ronnie from the Downtown Neighborhood Association.
Hi, commissioners. Good morning. Thanks for having me. So I am the Land Use and Transportation Chair of the Downtown Neighborhood Association, and we like trees, but we also
Give us your name?
Oh, Ronnie Boyle. Thank you. We are extremely excited about this project, and I personally have been getting excited emails since 2013, I think, when it was a glimpse in someone's eye. So we're really excited to be part of it. A lot of downtown residents don't have cars, and they live downtown because of the multimodal transportation options, and we really appreciate them, and we're lucky to have them, but we're very aware that there's so much room for improvement. Transportation access and safety comes up in almost every meeting that I host. And too often, people have very personal stories of close calls, injuries, that they have to share. And I'd certainly like to hear less of them for all the right reasons. So people are very excited about feeling safer walking more and feeling safer biking more. They want to do more of all of these things, but there are challenges. And the issue of bikes on the streets, unfortunately, on the sidewalks, is an issue that comes up very often. And it's an issue where people don't feel comfortable biking in the streets right now. And so then they bike on the sidewalks and then cause an issue with people feeling comfortable walking downtown. So we're very aware that these issues are linked. We're really excited about having comfortable facilities for biking downtown. And we think that's going to have a ripple effect, that they're all going to be improved. So,
Art, can I ask you a question on this?
Yeah, sure.
Because we sold our house. I live in a rental apartment downtown, so I'm doing a lot more walking.
Right.
And I feel particularly vulnerable. And in light of the terrible tragedy that recently happened on Hawthorne, it struck me that there are limits to what we can accomplish through legislating. I mean, we can legislate all we want, but some of the behavior we're talking about, cars and bikes observing the laws of the road, stopping at red lights, not accelerating when it's yellow, not putting people at risk. What do you have any thoughts, just generally, about beyond the changes in design and some of these kinds of improvements, which hopefully are designed to make it safe for everyone to share our streets? What's missing in terms of getting the message to people that irresponsible and dangerous behavior on our streets is not tolerated, whether you're in a car or a bike?
That's a great challenge, I think. I think Portland really is at a place in its evolution right now that we're growing up as a city. And this is, I think, part of that. We're experiencing more congestion and more sort of conflicts as we navigate the streets on a daily basis. And I think your initial reaction to that is to sort of try harder to navigate through, and that's actually accelerating those conflicts. And we do need to develop a culture where people understand that as a city gets larger, you need to expect it takes more time to traverse through the city. And I think we're right at the moment of that evolution right now, where we're seeing people sort of fighting their way through the congestion rather than realizing they're just going to have to expect it takes 5 more minutes to go through downtown because we're a bigger city now.
But are we going to win that fight through friendly persuasion or through a bigger stick? And I'll give you one example.
Sure.
I was walking to get a haircut the other day, and someone in a car accelerated, made the turn, almost ran me over. I stopped. I said, "Please slow down," and she told me to F off. Right. And I was saying, well, I'm not sure friendly persuasion is going to reach that person. And
right.
So what – as between carrot and stick, what has to happen to get people to think twice about the consequence of their behavior?
There probably is a greater need for enforcement in the central city as part of this package. At this point, you know, the main tools that we have at our disposal within transportation would be overall information campaigns and infrastructure investment, you know, those types of elements. But I do think, you know, part of the challenge is especially if people are leaving the freeway network in which they're either going very fast or frustrated that they're not going very fast. When they enter the central city, they're trying to make up time at this point.
And so that's what's encouraging some of the behavior
yeah,
we're
exactly,
seeing where
right.
where people are making U-turns, they're going through
sure.
private rights of way, they're
right.
they're getting frustrated and engaging in even higher risk behavior, which seems to me to work against the purpose of what you're trying to do by making the street safe.
No, I think that's exactly true. And I think until we're able to come with levels of infrastructure, not just in biking and walking, but also in transit infrastructure, we're not able to turn the tide in terms of the level of congestion we're seeing on this, especially on state facilities right now. And so that this is a, you know, a key part of this package is the making the central city more safe and comfortable. But another piece is really partnering with TriMet on some of those larger investments for sure.
This could be simplistic, but it's my impression from visiting Copenhagen, for example, that the more common and mainstream biking and walking as opposed to getting around by car becomes, the better everybody behaves, because motorists to whom, you know, bikes are an annoying distraction and they wish they would all go away, once you're in a city where 25% of the trips are by bike, then you sort of accept they're there, you have to deal with them. And my impression is that in cities like Amsterdam or Copenhagen, where a huge portion of the population who are not daredevils or just kind of regular people are riding bikes, the culture shifts from one in which, I mean, to some extent, the bicycle culture is one of we're bold and brave and young and we're going to zip around like crazy to, well, no, this is just another way of getting around and we're all, you know, clunking along together as people tend to do on the bike share bikes. So obviously there's always going to be bad behavior in any context, but I think that as the context changes, both my impression is sort of both sides or all sides behave better.
Thank you. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
See if anybody wishes to testify on item 968. Anybody wish to testify?
No one signed up.
Okay, I don't know. No one signed up.
Mr. Lightning wants to speak.
Okay, Mr. Lightning. Welcome. Just give us your name and you have 3 minutes.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. I really like that bike share program. I think that's really something good for the city. One of the issues I have is that when I prefer to walk around the city. I've always done that. But I like to see people riding the bicycles also. And one of the concerns I have, I try to work with them in a reasonable manner, I guess, is that when I'm going over, say, like Broadway Bridge or the Steel Bridge, it is difficult for somebody that predominantly walks through the city to have the bikes coming alongside them on those type of bridges. And I don't know if there's been any thought put into that on how that should be handled, because some of the walkways, as you know, aren't very wide, so it is a little bit more difficult, say, on the Broadway Bridge to walk and then have the bikes going by you. So I'm hoping maybe some more studies can be done on that as a safety issue and maybe just a respect for the walkers and the people on bikes and how they can deal with that situation. Another thing I'd like to see is that Central City, I want to see to be kind of designated as the safe zone. And what I mean by that is I like to see the bicycles. I want to see more electric car type use. I don't want to see any of these diesel buses anymore in that what I call the safe zone. What I want to see established throughout the city is when you call it the safe zone, it's also I want to see more emphasis on having clean air. And as we know, when we're talking transportation, we can begin to phase out these vehicles that we don't have to sit around and breathe this diesel. I can't stand that. I don't like it. I like to walk. Nobody in this room can tell me that's healthy for you. So why not create a zone to where we can establish it that we want clean air also in that central city zone? And that should be part of this overall plan, is to begin to phase out any type of vehicles, any type of transportation that is unhealthy for the people that do want to bike, that do want to walk, that do want to live more of a healthier life, and we don't want to breed those fumes. So I want more emphasis on that, on creating ways to do that. And I know we're talking maybe going in the driverless vehicle position, and I think that would be ideal in that central city plan, and to focus on clean air for the people that want to ride their bikes, that want to walk, that want to live healthier, and shouldn't have to breathe those diesel fumes when they're walking downtown just to go to the parks or wherever they want to go. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson?
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson, and I want to make sure that we're not patting ourselves on our back as we're taking steps backwards. On the general issue of transportation, Ms. Fritz previously most clearly raised concerns about how fare enforcement is done on TriMet. And what did not get really brought into that conversation is the fact that there didn't used to be any fare enforcement in downtown on TriMet because there wasn't any fare. TriMet has, I don't know how much intergovernment cooperation there was, or whether they acted unilaterally, but they certainly did destroy first the fareless buses and then the fareless max. And when we really talk about public safety and convenient usage of downtown, I think that that's an issue that this body and the county commission would do well to cooperate and engage with the TriMet on. We won't get into the bigger picture of how the TriMet board should be appointed. The issue Mr. Lightning raised, I'm not sure where we are as far as air quality in the central city core versus other areas. And I know money is always tight, so but I think it is worth considering, especially for Mr. Novick, since he's got the PBOT portfolio, if we can, in discussions with Mr. Merkley and Mr. Wyden, maybe there is a magic way that we could, if TriMet won't cooperate with us on the Fairless Square, we can make them reroute all their through the downtown core buses to be into downtown and turn around and go back buses, because there won't be any diesel buses on 5th and 6th Avenue where we'll put electric muni buses. There's plenty of electric buses all over the world, including servicing all of the city of San Francisco, not diesel-powered buses, electric buses. Expenses, catenary, it's beyond the scope of a city budget item, except we did manage to finance the streetcar, which is an electric bus. Probably had substantial federal help maybe with that. But so let's do it again. Let's consider that 5th and 6th Avenue should be served by tram or electrified San Francisco muni-type buses. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you. Okay, it's an emergency ordinance. Carla, please call the roll.
Novick?
Thank you, Ronnie and Gabe and Art and all the folks who have worked on this over the years, and thanks in advance to all of the stakeholders who engage in an extensive process over the next year to identify the actual projects. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you for all your work. Aye.
Fish.
Thank you, Commissioner Novick, for really taking a leadership role and helping to make our streets safer. Aye.
Saltzman.
Yeah, thanks to the Oregon Department of Transportation and the Metro and Commissioner Novick for helping bring home the bacon for some improved safety downtown. Aye. Okay, the ordinance is